Welcome everyone to the CEO.digital show. My name is Craig McCartney, and I'll be your host that's going to guide you through an open exploration of technologies and trends straight from the C-suite. You'll hear insights will help you better deliver results for your company and its stakeholders. We'll be interviewing a range of C-suite executives, those that are creating technology to those that are implementing it to support their businesses. Find out more and stay up to date at CEO.digital. And don't forget to like and subscribe to the show wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Today's guest is Dax Grant, CEO, COO, CIO Global 100 list, 100 women to watch in tech, Forbes Technology Council, 100 powerless keynote speaker, author, and philanthropist. Dax is well recognized for digitizing businesses, catalyzing turnarounds, and utilizing courageous leadership together with technology to unlock value. Dax's accomplishment in business and technology are recognized within the Forbes Technology Council. Having worked with a variety of FTSE 100 and Fortune 500 and fintechs as executive director, owner, advisor, non-exec director, Dax is multilingual, globally experienced technology and operations executives who provide strategic insight and creating top quarterly results. Dax helps global and international businesses attain top quartile performance, societal impact, and staff advocacy, impacting the world in a positive way for shareholders, regulators, and society through purpose beyond profit values. Wow, what an interesting and exciting introduction. Dax, welcome to the CEO.digital show.
Thanks, Craig. Looking forward to our conversation.
Me too. So let's get straight into it. You've had a very interesting career to date, and lots to unpack in that introduction. Can you just tell us about some of the career highlights and your journey up until this point?
Yeah, sure. I guess my career didn't have any sort of grand plan to start with. I had a few goals. You know, I originally joined a large bank and spent a lot of time with our customers, actually. I looked after a corporate lending portfolio and looked after a branch at one stage. So it taught me a lot. And that was the highlight because I love customers, I love our clients in whatever business I work in. And really starting there is always a good place. From lots of different things, from working in Visa Europe and a special time there going through the acquisition from a Visa Inc. perspective and merging the two businesses together, a really, really fascinating time. Some interesting stories about digitization, both within Barclays, but also within HSBC, looking after a global operation, really, really special time in terms of making sure our service is right, looking after our colleagues, but also a really exciting digitization agenda. And some other things as well. You know, I do a lot in the not-for-profit world, and some of the most special things I remember are working with the Royal Latin School, some special times building a sports campus science centre and a local fundraising campaign that raised millions and has really left a legacy with the school. So more to come on that, but quite exciting times and much more excitement in the future.
Yeah, I was going to touch on that actually because, well, you seem to have struck a good balance between commercial and non-profit elements. How do you achieve that? I mean, how do you squeeze it all in to your day?
I work on what I care about and I care about all the right things. It is a balance, but I know that knowing myself and knowing what's inside me, being very commercial and value driven is really important in whatever organisation I'm in. But I'm also hugely philanthropic, so working on the Family Foundation and that side of things. And really, that's what gives me the balance between the two. So, you know, I'm a great believer that you create value, whether that's in a not-for-profit world or in a commercial world. And I just love the variety. I'm quite quick to pick things up. I love market trends and I get very interested in new ventures. So more to come on that as well.
Exciting. I know you mentioned a few things on the horizon, so we'll definitely follow that with keen interest. So you're also on the Forbes Technology Council. You're a Cranfield University's 100 Women to Watch, a non-executive director and also keynote speaker. Again, that's why I mentioned, you know, squeezing stuff into your day. It does sound like you're busy. But How did you get to a point in your career when you were recognized across the board like that? I mean, what are the sort of your career milestones and what sort of stuck out?
I do sit back and set myself goals. So I always have goals. Some of them are public and some of them are very private, and I work on them. But a lot of it is genuinely day-to-day actions. So I focus a lot on my time. I do meditate. So I do spend a lot of time in that space. And I do believe that's particularly important in today's busy, connected world, because it really just center you and ground you on what's absolutely key. And then, like I say, there wasn't really a grand plan. It was lots of small actions that were set into a direction. And what I learned about myself is more than any of the 3 degrees, the deliverers, the people, successes, all of those sorts of things. Actually, being very clear about who you are, your personal values, and also having a clear understanding of where you want to go, that determination and grit. Grit is a clear differentiator in the world we live in today.
Those goals that you speak of, do you go ahead and write them down and have like a 12-month plan or like a quarterly plan? How do you sort of visualize those goals?
There are lots of different techniques and it depends on what works for you. For me, I have my little book and I write a few notes in there. I have a little whiteboard as well and I do whiteboard. So, for example, the beginning of 2021, I did a little sketch about all the things that I wanted to make sure happened in life. And to be fair, I don't check it daily because once it's written down, it's written down. But then towards the end of the year, I did reflect on that and I got the whiteboard out again and I kind of smiled actually. Although I put some things on there that I didn't necessarily think that's going to happen in 21. They sure did happen in 21. So I probably achieved 90% of what I'd set out to do and a couple of nice surprises along the way.
Yeah, it's surprising that, isn't it? I know I do it maybe once a year. My girlfriend always makes me write down goals that seem impossible or too far out of reach. And then once you've written them down, you sort of said, okay, how do I get to that point? Or at least how do I put your first foot forward towards that goal? And then, yeah, it's crazy what can happen. So I'm a firm believer in that. Let's talk about your role, your current role at Global Transform. If you could tell us a little bit about that, you know, high level, who the sort of clients that you work with, how are you helping them achieve their goals and get over their sort of challenges?
Yeah, I mean, Global Transform is very close to my heart. It's been running for years, somewhat in the background sometimes. It's focused on the C-suite that can be in any sort of organization, but particularly in some of the FTSE Fortune firms and focused really on the global international remit. But I do also, through Global Transform, get asked to do a lot of work with venture firms, a lot of mentoring, coaching as well in that particular space. And I guess because of the experiences that I've got in looking after small and medium businesses and that lending experience, as well as the practical experiences of the day-to-day jobs that I've done, that's actually something that's been highly sought after in the marketplace. So yes, I guess all of those things have come together, but it is really about C-suite supporting CEOs that really want to make a difference in the world, and bottom line results of course come with that, but actually working with standout CEOs and leadership teams.
And you've got quite interesting experience and role. I think in your description, you know, you've got CEO, COO, CIO. What sort of in that amalgamation or sort of hybrid of those elements, what's the benefit of having those different hats on when working with, you know, the C-suite?
It's a really good question, Craig. And I love the fact that I'm very fortunate in the position that I'm in. I get approached for all of those different types of positions, whether through mentoring or whether through actually direct positions. I guess the beauty of it is that having sat in pretty much most seats, you get to understand a perspective. And so when you're working with boards, there's a real understanding of what does it mean in terms of looking after the tech stack. Actually, how does that technology strategy sit? If you're in a COO position, understanding the technology subset, but also the operational side of things as well. And having that enterprise view is very, very important. And as I say, the marketplace at the moment is hugely buoyant. So the types of roles that I do get approached for are a plethora of those, but I generally am at the point now where that connectivity is, as long as I know which seat I'm sitting in, I can add value to that table. And I'm a great believer in teamwork at the executive team level. And that's very, very important in any highly successful organization.
Great. And then if we're talking about, you spoke about the board there and having those board level conversations. For striving leaders or people who are sort of aspiring to make it to C-suite, speaking to the board, digitizing their businesses, what's your advice for them? How can they translate those conversations into digital transformation?
A very good question. I'm glad you sort of pitch it at the board level, really, because there are so many organizations that digitize from within, but actually having that clear board mandate and having clear accountabilities and a combined understanding of what the strategy is very, very important. And many organizations need to make sure that that is very, very clear. Otherwise, there is lots of activity. And so that's one of the things for me, spending the time at board level on those conversations, but also ensuring that you've got a set of practical folks around you with different expertise, the ability to work in teams, and the ability to dissect that down very precisely into a plan of action that delivers out. So as long as you're clear on where you are as a firm in the marketplace, and then you have that capability to deliver, absolutely key. But I cannot emphasize enough the third element, which is culture. Culture, the number of CEO positions that I've been approached for, or COO positions, where, you know, folks ask me, yes, Dax, but how do we manage the culture? We need some help with culture. That is so important because it drives the business in a very different way. It keeps retention, but also culture itself is a standout competitive advantage.
Yeah, that's a good segue into some of the topics I was going to tackle. So let's talk about that culture change for a second. Well, maybe longer than that. Are you seeing that pattern a lot with the clients that you're working with and, you know, other businesses that you've been involved in lately?
It is particularly key now post-pandemic, really. Lots of folks have gone through lots of personal journeys during that time, and keeping that culture really, really cohesive in a hybrid world is a topic that's on many boardroom tables. So how that is sort of kept alive and brought into really visionary leadership. As I say, a lot of what I talk about is, you know, if you look at in the pandemic, we as a society and organizations are very good at mobilizing to a crisis. Now, it happened to be a global crisis, but we did it. Now, if you look at from a leadership perspective, then galvanizing to a vision, direction, that is very, very different, because that is accessing a different part of you in terms of building, growing, a growth mindset, rather than a stemming something and all the activity that happened during the vaccinations, all of those sorts of things. So very, very different, but very pertinent at the moment. And certainly there is a pivot point for organisations that will rocket now post the pandemic.
Yeah, it's about, I guess, retaining, like you say, retaining some of the talent, but then also it's that cultural shift when implementing those big transformation projects. When you are starting a big transformation project, do you start with the tech or the people, or sort of does the vision guide that journey?
I love these questions, Craig. What I find is lots of other people start with the tech with me. Where I start is with the people. So it's always an interesting conversation. By the end of that conversation, I'm a technology expert on every part of the platform. But genuinely understanding it, it is people. It's people strategy. Technology is underpinning that. Clearly, there is a technology strategy that sits underneath the business strategy, but it's very much subservient to that. And that is really the essence of it.
It is interesting. I do have these conversations with other tech leaders, and I think that it is more and more moving, hopefully, to the way you just described it. It's very interesting. So let's talk about technology for a second. We can sort of dive into the people and culture a little bit further down the line. But technology is seen as an enabler of enterprise innovation rather than a driver. Would you agree with that point of view? I guess we have sort of just touched on that, but do you want to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if I take the experience as technology, absolutely an enabler. in organizations I've worked, you know, if you look at during the pandemic, you know, getting everybody around the world to be pretty much home based from office based locations, that required a innate focus on technology and absolutely enabled businesses to ensure business continuity during that time, which is absolutely essential. Technology is also very interesting in terms of next stage technologies. I spend a lot of my time looking at that, as well as the technologies that keep us steady and stable today. There are some very interesting technologies out there and having some really interesting conversations around that sort of thing. So it is the balance of all of those things that come together. But I do also say technology is only as good as the behaviours that go with it. It is very easy, you know, if I bring it down to our practical day-to-day situations, it is very easy to sit in front of a PC and be surrounded with technology all day, whereas actually a really good face-to-face conversation where it's possible to do that safely, actually, you know, it does make a difference. And behaviourally, having those self-disciplines to make sure technology is in that enabling place and it is very clear where that place sits.
Talking about new technologies, there's always something new around the corner. Is there anything in particular that's got you excited in terms of maybe trialing it or implementing it or seeing the sort of next stages of that particular technology?
There are lots of interesting technologies out there without sort of centering on any particular one, as that would give it all away, wouldn't it? But let's just say, I mean, distributed ledger, fascinating. It is a real enabler. Quantum, I spent a lot of time looking at quantum and physics as one of the areas that I studied many, many years ago, but quantum has got some really interesting things. Also, you know, balancing all of that up with the cyber side of things, some real developments in the cyber world and the analytics space, very, very powerful. And, you know, looking from a financial services perspective, there are lots of organizations working on cutting edge technologies, you know, crypto, et cetera, et cetera. But there are a variety of payments-based technologies that are really leading edge.
Some of those themes are, we definitely see those cropping up in some of the events that we run. I think you nailed all the sort of more exciting ones that we've been all discussing. And then if you are a tech leader and you know, you've got all these new technologies coming down the line, there's a sort of balancing act of wanting to be an early adopter and making use of it so your business can benefit and you can be, you know, seen as the one sort of leading that change. But then you've also got to ensure that you've made the business case watertight and also have necessary backups in case the things don't sort of go to plan. Taking into account all those things, do you have any advice for the sort of CIOs of the world that are looking at bringing new technologies in?
I mean, it's a balance. And the first things first, make sure home base is sound. So the technologies that keep your business running, you know, I'm used to financial services. So if it's a service level, it's 5-9s. Everybody wants their payments to go through. And there is no forgiveness for any payments not going through, right? So that is home base and making sure that's secure. Clearly, we've gone through a pandemic. So looking at the financial statements of a number of organisations, that has kind of come through as well. So making sure that financially you're sound as an organisation before investing in lots of new technology is really, really important. And ring fencing is so important in the world of today. The reason I say that is because folks can become very, very interested in the latest technologies, and they are absolutely right to, but it has to be kept in its rightful place in terms of a healthy innovation environment and some very, very targeted investments sort of early stage. And being able to have that learning approach in that space is absolutely key. And again, Craig, it comes back to my earlier point around culture.
My next question was about culture again. So what would you say the cultural ingredients of a successful transformation project are? And, you know, feel free to go on a deep dive exploration with us.
Thank you. Trust is really important. Trust and teamwork is so important. You know, we all spend lots of time on the logical things, but the best organizations I've worked in, either within the organization or within the marketplace in partnerships, there is a high level of trust and honesty around all of those conversations. Doesn't mean to say we don't have hard conversations as part of that, but they're good and healthy and always very, very constructive. So that is really important. Accountability is absolutely key as well. There are many organizations that I've walked into and you will attend something and there will be 30, 40 people in the virtual room when I look at that, it is telling me something about that organization. And actually, to be fair to our people, setting up that accountability set correctly is absolutely key for motivation levels, but it's also a standout capability in the marketplace, right? If your people know what they're accountable for and they've got a very respectful culture, lots of things happen very, very quickly and in a very positive way. So, you know, your employee survey starts rocket through the roof through that particular leadership approach. So those things are all very, very important. How we treat each other day to day in any organisation is key, whether we're transforming, looking after the day to day, very, very key. And the last thing that I would add on that is knowing your place within the market and being super clear on that. And it's a refinement process, don't get me wrong, but if you know where you are and whether you can see where the market's going, oh my goodness, can you rock it in that digitization transformation?
That's a sound advice there. Thank you, Dax. So let's move on to another topic I know you're very passionate about, and that's diversity and inclusion. So I guess my first question around that topic, taking into account digital transformation, because that is, you know, what we're talking about now, but how can leaders champion social transformation as a complement to that digital transformation? Do you have any examples or insight you can share around that?
I've got a few thoughts. I mean, that there are lots of folks focused in this area, right? So, you know, if you look at that social world, you know, impact for society, clearly the environment, our planet, and how we approach the ESG agenda is very, very important. There are lots of things in terms of equality, diversity, of course, inclusion, lots of focus on recruiting the right people. But it's also very important to balance that, as I say, with a really healthy culture and how you grow that. The work that I've and the time I've spent with Harvard Business School on this particular area is fascinating. Work with a number of key folks, you know, one of them being Michael Porter. Lots of folks will know Michael for Porter's Five Forces in terms of strategic model, but a lot of work on creating social value. And, you know, the essence of this is, as a societal CEO or anyone on the C-suite, whether you're COO, CIO, or in a commercial space, the CCO, really being clear about how that works. So it's not we are commercial and we happen to do some things for society. If culturally you have already absorbed that as an organization, doing the right thing by society is already in your culture. So it's part of the DNA of the organization and it's part of the leadership model in itself. Many, many organizations approach this from a, you know, let's measure some things, let's have a look at the supply chain and make sure everybody's ethical and you know, hitting sort of key measures. That is a very superficial approach. There is much more depth in terms of the cultural standout that sits underneath that. And the standout marketplace C-suite leaders have already got that in hand.
Yeah. So there's some strong evidence to suggest that organizations that embed diversity and inclusion into their broader culture, they tend to drive more innovation, they attract and retain better talent. So in terms of your opinion, your views, how can leaders really and truly embed diversity and inclusion rather than it being just like what you mentioned, potentially like a cosmetic exercise?
Yes. And, you know, this is at the heart of it, really, isn't it? I mean, I went through lots of different organisations and still going through more. And folks said to me at one stage, do you know, Dax, you're a minority? I said, well, what do you mean? They said, well, you're a woman, originate from Bosnia. You know, you're from a low socioeconomic grouping originally. My father was a coal miner. My mum a shepherdess. Did you know about all of these things? And of course I did, but I genuinely said, do you know, ever thought about it that way? If I wanted to go and study the latest thing on physics, or if I wanted to go into an organisation, I went into that organisation because that was what I was interested in and I was interested in working with those people. That is clearly not how a lot of society works. It does in pockets, but then you're kind of into a whole different piece. So I do a lot of work in diversity, inclusion and social mobility. Very excited about the board appointment with Mission Beyond on social mobility. So that's very, very exciting. But actually, the way I look at it is really respect, kindness, understanding for each other as people. When you're looking at that, you're not looking at it as a lens of what was your background and where did you come from? you're looking at it from that perspective. And that happens in society. We need to check and balance and make sure that those measures are in place and manage any unconscious bias. But I am a fundamental believer of, if you're treating folks with respect, they will bring other folks in from different backgrounds as well. And, you know, I've seen it in sort of many teams that I've looked after. The teams happen to be very socially and socioeconomic diverse, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's a metrics-driven approach. Far from it. It's just happened here, all the measures, and exceed them.
We could probably take your answer from some of the things you said already, but is there enough being done? If we talk about financial services or across industry, are you seeing enough being done currently, or can organisations do more?
There is always opportunity to do more. What I do see is lots of awareness, and I do see the difference between, you know, the folks that post on LinkedIn, for example, that they're champions of diversity, and actually the folks that are involved in day-to-day initiatives that, you know, really drive that action. So I do believe awareness is high. Action is still needed hugely across all the organisations, and it's across all sectors, right? Eventually everybody becomes a minority, right? So you just have to keep the whole world in balance. But driving that is key, driving that at the entry level, which is again why the work with Mission Beyond is very exciting, but also driving that at board level and a societal level so that there is that representation is very key. And you get the best out of that, both for the individual and the team and fundamentally the organisation. So this is not a nice to have. It is scientifically proven that performance levels in diverse teams, you know, rocket for those organisations. So to be honest, if you haven't got that action plan, you need to get that action plan. And that's what I say to anyone that I meet.
And you've mentioned Beyond a couple of times there. I mean, do you want to talk a little bit about the work that you're doing there? Because it's still quite early days. I know you just joined, haven't you?
Yeah. So Mission Beyond is very, very close to my heart. It is chaired by a fabulous person, Harriet Green. And the focus of it is tackling the grand challenges in society. The first of those is very much focused around social mobility and creating a national platform around access to opportunities. And it really resonates with my personal journey. So fantastic group, fantastic team. And the values that sit and underpin that are tremendous. And, you know, we're working with some fantastic people to make that happen. Early days, but our Open Doors platform is going to be amazing.
Well, we'll post it on the page where we promote the podcast, so at least people can get a link to it. So it's easy access for them to have a look and explore. Sounds exciting, though. So continuing the diversity and inclusion conversation, you also have experience around coaching and acting as a mentor for women in technology. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, there is a difference between coaching and mentoring. And it's a very fundamental difference. And for me, mentoring is helpful. And I've got lots of fantastic mentor sponsors and guides in life. And equally, I've encouraged everyone that I've worked with to have the same. But coaching is very different. So if I'm your mentor or you are my mentor, then you will share things with me, experiences, and I will learn from that or vice versa. That's one thing. But coaching is really about accessing the inner potential of any person, and requires very innate listening skills and very, very focused questioning around that to get the best out of that person. And so very, very short bursts of interaction and intervention in those conversations can see a person rocket literally from what happens in a coaching conversation, very different from absorbing someone else's experience.
And if you're starting out in tech and you were a woman, what are the avenues that they can explore to get additional, you know, mentoring or some coaching? Or are there sort of any projects, initiatives worth talking about?
There are lots of different opportunities out there, whatever place you're coming from. Putting aside that the work that we're working on at Mission Beyond, there are lots of programs. There's Tech Up Women. There are lots of things that business schools also offer. And many of the large organizations offer taster programs as part of that. So really, it's about stepping in there into those conversations. There are also some fantastic conferences to join. So if you're not ready to do a sort of intro course or anything like that, joining some of those gets you chatting to folks that are in that space. And often that in itself can lead to interesting opportunities. But also be precise. So I'm a mum. So with my daughter, we looked very carefully at her opportunity when she was looking to do some work experience as part of her schooling, and we targeted some very, very key organisations as part of that as well. So if you want to be in that space, some work experience is fantastic. I mean, for her, she's a chemist, biochemist, and now and studying that at university, but we arranged for her a very special intervention where she got involved in STEM work and stem cells, etc. So that's not normally what folks do for work experience. So if you want to make it different, make your life different, tackle those opportunities differently and set each other up for a success, really.
Yeah, great. That's definitely useful. So let's talk about, well, just a couple more questions, some final thoughts before we head into our fun round. So what are some of the traits and skills that you think aspiring leaders should cultivate?
Very good question. You've got to know your values. Really important. It's important anyway, but in today's interconnected world, your values speak volumes. That is definitely key. And it is your navigation in whatever situation you're in. If you're true to those, everything else is very clear. You've got to have that grit, determination. People look at me and say lots of lovely things, but actually I put it down to grit. A lot of things that I've achieved. And don't get me wrong, sometimes it's really tough. Sometimes it's very exciting, but at the end of the day, grit takes you right the way through all of that. You know, having that support network as well, very, very important, because having key folks that you sound a mentor and use as sounding boards in the nicest sense is absolutely key. And I guess the final point I would add is leading from a place of compassionate empathy. When you look at life, how do you measure it? And when you're moving on to the next life, how do you want to be remembered? And you know, you want to be remembered as that person that was there when it mattered, cared, you know, hard on the issues, don't get me wrong, but with compassion. And if a member of the team is down or if something's not working, you know, you want to be part of that environment and solving it. So, yeah, that, I think that would sum it up.
Yeah, it's very important to always be human and know that everyone else is as well. So what's the single piece of advice you wished you had known earlier in your career? We've just spoken about some really good bits of insight, but is there anything, one thing that you wish someone had said to you in the early stages that would have maybe saved you some time or sort of given you that trajectory a bit quicker when you needed it?
Know who you are. And when you think you know who you are, look at it again and know who you are.
Okay, great. So again, we could probably talk about some of those topics for many hours, but let's get to our sort of fun round. And this is where we end the podcast, where we get to know you a little bit better, Dax. You know, we get to know the person behind all those wonderful titles and your career description. So let's, technology is the theme. What's your sort of essential technology item that, you know, right now you couldn't do without?
I really love my AirPods. And when I've got my time on my own, I have my AirPods in. I'll be listening to music on Spotify or whatever it might be. But also, I love them because, you know, if my daughter calls from university, call comes straight in. I can pick up the call very quickly. You know, I can be cooking dinner in the kitchen. It just gives so much flexibility in life. You know, and when the call's done, the music comes back on. It's just fantastic. You know, there's no wireless. It's all wireless, and they're really fast and easy to charge. So I really love those. I do quite like Alexa in the nicest sense. You ask Alexa any questions, she can pretty much answer it. Always very handy these days. And, you know, everybody gets caught up in so much paperwork and all the rest of it. Actually, you just want to ask someone a question. And if it happens to be the Alexa and she knows the time of day, fantastic, right?
Exactly, yeah. It's quite interesting to see how also the younger generation are now engaging. Like my daughter's 5 and she's constantly shouting at Alexa to play some sort of song or ask her some sort of scientific question or whatever. It's very sweet. So let's talk about your job and let's talk about your family and your friends. How would they describe what you do? What do your friends think you do versus, you know, what are your family? And then, you know, what are your clients? Is there a clear distinction? Do they know?
A really good question. I don't know if they all know. I do know that they all know that I'm very driven. I'm very passionate about the things that I care about. I don't always get it right. I don't always get it wrong. I've got sort of somewhere in the middle. But if I'm going to achieve something, I will sort of set my mind to it. I do try and have a giggle along the way. but you know, sometimes times are tough and sometimes you get a lot of time to enjoy as well. So I guess it's about making most of those things. Does everybody know the same? I guess what I've found is some people know my public persona. My close friends really know me and my character. And that's the difference, really.
Okay. We've spoken about your technology essential item. Is anything from a work context on your desk which you simply, again, you couldn't do without?
I have lots of beautiful artwork from my children. Why do I have that? Because it makes me remember what's really important. You know, I'll show you, this is kind of from my little boy. He's, you know, it's a picture. And to him, it's my precious mummy. It doesn't matter what else I do. But that's it. And, you know, when I have a moment going, how do I tackle this one or what needs to happen next? I kind of go, actually, that's what's really important. And the rest of it is all about respect and kindness, really. So, yes, I've got pictures from my little boy, but I've got, you know, a birthday card from my daughter. She's very artistic.
So nice.
A card from her as well. So they keep me grounded.
Yeah. And then what's on the frame behind you on the wall? What do those certificates represent?
They represent a lot of work. Hey, look, I went to a state school. I couldn't speak English when I started school, so I had to learn, quick. I didn't know that I was fairly good at this sort of learning stuff and sort of collected, you know, if you'd have told me, you know, as a teenager, you'd have 3 degrees from some of the best universities in the world, then I wouldn't have believed you necessarily. I didn't intend to do that. You know, if you talk to Elon Musk, you don't need any university education to be an entrepreneur. But actually, my belief is you learn in lots of different ways. And so my 3 degrees, my coaching, my, you know, I do set a standard for what I work on. And I do like to make sure I've got the qualification as well to set the approach, set the standard. And we ask lots of folks in our teams to get accredited for different things, but you've really got to walk that talk. So there's a few of those sitting in the background.
Yeah, impressive. And then let's talk about, there's not been too many physical events at the moment, but have you been to any events lately that have inspired you or sort of changed your perception about something, or have you seen someone speak that's done a similar thing?
I wouldn't say no. I mean, I have been to lots of very interesting events, but actually who I'm drawn to at the moment is Oprah Winfrey. Not because of any particular event, but I've got a lot of respect for her as a woman. She really knows herself. She is very down to earth and accesses that for all the people that she talks to. And she's clearly done very, very well with that. But she's very grounded in herself. And you know, she has shared lots of experiences where her mindset and how she approaches things have changed fantastically some events in life. So I've got a huge amount of respect for her as a person, and I've got a huge amount of respect for the way that she conveys that to everybody. And she respects everybody, respecting her position in life, which is fantastic.
Yeah, she seems to speak to people wherever you are in the social ladder, and they one-to-one, and you can feel that connection as well. So let's talk about, you've spoken about ledgers in terms of technology, and that just made me think, you know, do you own any crypto, or do you have any NFTs, or so do you play in that area?
I do get involved in lots of conversations. If I wanted to do crypto trade, I do have the capability to do that. To be honest with you, you know, doing that on a very personal basis is not the way that, you know, I will make my fortune, as they say. But yes, you know, could I access it? Absolutely. And there are some tremendous technologies that really do open up the world. So I understand its place, but the way that I have set out my life goals isn't going to be through crypto trading personally.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bit too volatile, isn't it? That wraps up that section. Thank you so much, Dax, for spending the time with us. I've thoroughly enjoyed speaking with you, and I know our listeners will benefit from some of the insights that you shared with us. So thank you.
Thank you, Craig. Appreciate it.
And if you enjoyed that episode, be sure to check out the rest of our guests that we've spoken to recently, and like and subscribe and all that lovely stuff on your favorite podcast streaming service. We'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.